It's open mic time. We're joined by the co-founder of the 10 Point Coalition. He's just back from meeting with the Illinois Black Legislative Caucus in Chicago. He joins us every Monday at 1 o'clock. Welcome, Eugene F. Rivers. Is it the third?
It's the third.
Yeah, it is the third.
I wasn't suggesting you were not telling the truth.
I just want to be clear.
No. It's actually the third. It's sort of an amazing story. I got my butt beat unmercifully.
Why, for being the third?
Yeah, oh, dude. You know, walk into a classroom with a bunch of brothers. They're all named Leroy and James. And then the teacher introduces you as Eugene F. Rivers III. I just got beat for bad style. Well, it was just rough.
Right? Prepared you for the rest of your life,
Eugene,
right?
Exactly.
Eugene really doesn't work.
I could have been Rashid or Leroy or Clarence, but I had to be Eugene. I mean, part of it is because my family are all kind of bourgeois blacks, believe it or not, right? Mm-hmm. My grandfather graduated from South Carolina State in 1924.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Right? And got a master's degree from the University of Michigan, right? So they were bougie people.
What do you mean bougie?
Bourgeois.
Sorry.
Right. And in fact, I was born in Boston because my father was a student at the Museum School of Fine Arts. Eugene F. Rivers, Junior, of course.
Painter, sculptor,
In fact, he became the editor, one of the editors of Muhammad Speaks, assisting in co-founding it with Malcolm X, like in 1958.
You're kidding.
It's amazing. No, I mean, he was this fire-breathing social realist who, in the early 50s, couldn't get a job because you weren't going to get a job in Boston, right? So he moved to Chicago.
So you knew Malcolm X?
Oh, yeah. He worked with Malcolm X.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
How was that?
That's intense. Oh, no. For another time. Because he did the pivotal illustration that was suggested that Malcolm was worthy of death. And he actually did the illustration of a Farrakhan address that was insinuating that Malcolm was worthy of being assassinated. Oh, it's amazing.
That is the voice of Reverend Eugene F. Rivers III. Gene, it's good to see you.
Good to see you.
I just want to ask you, is there a fourth? Have you foisted this on a son of
yours? No. In fact, you want to hear something very
There's
interesting?
There's no Eugene the fourth?
No. My son's name is Malcolm.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that's a hipper name than Eugene.
Oh, of course
it
is.
I don't mean to hurt your feelings.
No. It was a square name, right? So,
yeah.
Which is why I had to be an over-top kind of guy, right?
Yeah.
You're a little guy with a crazy name, right?
Want to know what my middle name is?
What's that?
I'm not telling you. Okay, go ahead. Take it away, Margaret. I am from Philly. Yeah.
So you were just out in Illinois, and you had a funny little note in your memo to us when you talked about, in Boston, there's no tolerance for dirty politics compared to Chicago. Now, I would have thought we have sort of some would say, a corrupt legislature with having three speakers in a row and big trouble with felonies, et cetera.
Sure.
They're dirtier than we
are? Oh, Chicago puts the C in corruption.
Really?
Are you kidding? I mean, look, think about it, right? Big Bill Thompson, Al Capone, all of the organized crime stuff.
Yeah.
It's absolutely astounding. And there are these remarkable traditions. And part of it, in terms of black politics, is that if you think about Chicago, it's such an amazingly large town, right? You could actually stick Boston in the south side of Chicago about three times.
Yeah.
And so you have this remarkable history that goes back 80 years, right? And the black community has never had the critical mass of numbers. So we can flex muscle. Listen, in Chicago, this is actually remarkable. The policy kings, which were the original numbers people that did what we now call lotto, they actually gave Sam Mumu Giancana a run over the controlling of numbers.
Was he a mobster?
Oh, a big mobster.
Yeah.
Major league, right? And so think about this. In South Side of Chicago, you had black numbers runners and gangsters who were powerful enough to, for a substantial period of time, resist Sam Mumu Giancana, the organized crime in Chicago, Al Capone's Chicago. So there are traditions in Chicago, which go back 70 years, that are just intellectually and politically fascinating.
So what lessons you bring back here? Obviously, there's a black mayor in Chicago. What was it, 30 years ago, Harold Washington. The only even serious black candidate I can think of in Boston history was Mel King. What was it, 19? Same year, actually. 83. The exact same year.
Exactly.
Washington. So what lesson, from meeting with this black legislative caucus, what lessons do you bring back from the hometown of Barack Obama?
Well, actually, you'll love this. First thing is, thank God I live in Boston.
Why is that?
Right. One, you have on the south side of Chicago levels of violence that suggest that an American is safer in Afghanistan, and more Americans die in the south side of Chicago than die in Afghanistan. Last year, 500 people died, right, on the south side of Chicago. The first month, January, right, where it's freezing and crime should be down because it keeps brothers inside.
Right,
40 people died.
So what's that about?
That's about the fact that organized crime in Chicago, would, if not a blessing, would be an improvement, because you have levels of nihilism and despair which are unbelievable. And let me just say this, you know, we're talking about Obama, right? And one of the things that was striking to me as I talk with black legislators is that they have pretty much bailed on the issue of black-on-black violence, which is the critical issue in every major area where you have a critical mass of black people in the United States today. And so,
including
what,
here.
And,
so what do you mean they bailed? What does it mean that to say that black
words,
legislators have bailed on the issue? What, that it's unfixable?
No, it's not just unfixable. Conceive of it this way. Imagine if the Jewish community had 500 folk from their community, or the Irish community, or the Italian community. Imagine that you have unbelievably large numbers of fatalities due to crazy violence.
Yep.
There would be a massive mobilization. Now, Boston, to me, is unique, and, you know, we pat ourselves on the shoulder for real, because that would be inconceivable in Boston. That would be, for all the things you want to say about the town, Menino, the black preachers, Ed Davis, everybody would close ranks. And that would happen in less than 24 hours. No question about it. There's no question about it.
If
right?
What?
If there was some major craziness, you think of the Harlem Street murder. Harlem Street murder, where the three girls were killed and four were shot, right?
Yes.
People responded immediately. No, there is an immediate response that we've got to engage this thing, which you don't find in Chicago.
So what? Why here and why
numbers?
Not there?
Isn't it just numbers? I mean, they're tiny compared to Chicago.
No, that's not true. Listen, you have one of the most powerful cities in the country. You have a black political class that has been around for 70 years. It's been enormously influential. And then more importantly, it's the president's hometown.
Right.
It's the hometown of Jesse Jackson Sr., Jesse Jackson Jr., right? There's all of it's the city that produced Harold Washington, right?
So is the black middle class there abandoned the struggling?
Oh, the black middle class has resegregated itself. Yeah, you get the same pattern, right? Well, the black middle class, quite rightly, says, you know what? We're off this. I'm not having my kid live on the south and west side of Chicago shot like the little girl who had been at the inauguration with Obama.
Shot and killed.
You can't blame anybody for that.
Of course not. No, that's my point.
Yeah.
No, that's my point. But what I'm saying is, what was astounding out there, because I sat down with the president of the Black Legislative Caucus, I said, listen, how's this work that in the south side and the west side, more Americans die there than die in Afghanistan. And there's not this massive mobilization of the black community because they say this is completely over the top. This is inexcusable. And hell no, we're not going
to. So what's the answer to the question?
A lack of significant black political leadership, which and the other part that's interesting to me is that in this town, when you look at fights and corruption and spats, our black community, our black leadership, are a fairly tame crowd. You're not going to get the kind of crazy stuff we got with Jesse Jr.
Well, yeah, let's get to Jesse Jr. because he had a bright future.
Oh.
I mean, very charismatic, good-looking, you know, son of Jesse Jackson.
And much more of an affable people person than Obama,
right,
who was a much more cerebral, you know, kind of a languid handshake, really not into people like that, right?
Did you vote for Obama?
Of course I did.
Both times?
Of course.
Okay.
But tell people who don't know what happened to Jesse Jr. I mean, we know he had the mental health issues, but he was stealing.
I mean, so when you think about it, the antlers,
yeah,
the Michael Jackson hats, you know,
crazy.
The 40 or 50,000,
yeah,
the Rolex watches.
Fur coats.
You know, I mean, you say, wait a minute now, Jesse, you went to the Auburn school. Now, I understand if it was, you know, it was Junebug or Clarence, right? You'd go out and you'd buy some ridiculous car and you'd wear all the stuff, right, and be sort of ridiculous. But, Jesse, this is ridiculous.
But he's got a serious mental health issue. I'm not defending the behavior.
His wife's got a mental health issue?
Well, no, I don't know about his wife.
So
I'm talking about Jesse Jackson Jr. But, no, I'm serious. He's got a serious mental health issue.
Didn't Jesse Jackson Sr. wonder sometimes where these fur coats were coming from?
No, wait. On this, just it's mental health business. No, wait a minute. You can't be a charismatic. He was the sexiest politician alive.
Oh, yeah.
On the cover of People magazine, right? So wait a minute. Where's the mental health then? When everything was going good, right?
You're suspicious.
And no one picks it up. I mean, if you're bipolar, right? It should have happened. It should have happened at least once in 20 years before you got busted.
What do you think is a fraud?
No, I don't say it's a fraud. I don't say that.
You know, that's a very good point. That's a very good point.
Reverend Rivers, so what is your point? Is if it didn't come up for years when, as you say, things were going good and all of a sudden they can't, are you saying this is an excuse? He's creating this as an excuse for his behavior? What are you saying?
I'm saying it's a stretch for me to believe that if I've got a real clinically diagnosable problem, it only becomes known after I get busted.
So you think it is a fraud? Is what you're saying?
Fraud won't come out of my mouth.
Okay, well, you know that you, typically, as we all know from Silver Linings Playbook, the movie that just came out about bipolar disorder, it's usually in your 20s for men when these things start to manifest themselves, and not when you're how old is he? 40?
He's
been around for a while. Let me ask you something else about this United States Supreme Court. Now that they have a case before them about voting rights down south, which could really impact voting rights across the country, depending on how they come down on this. So explain this to people.
Well, I mean, listen, this voting rights, they're asking to renew and continue the statutes that were in the Voting Rights Act of 1965. I mean, that's the gist of it, right? And what's interesting in terms of the sort of contretemps that, you know, jumped off here with Gavin versus Roberts, right, is that
Secretary of State Gavin disputed what Roberts said.
And
what did Roberts say? Massachusetts has the
biggest deal. Let me read it to you, by the way. In this oral argument, and by the way, it says Shelby County in Alabama is challenging this provision of the Voting Rights Act, basically saying that of the 9 states that now need permission of the Justice Department before changing election laws, times have changed. It's not like it used to be.
The Southern County.
And Roberts' cynicism about this was evidenced when he asked the Solicitor General for the Department of Justice, who's obviously defending, do you know which state has the worst ratio of white voter turnout to African-American voter turnout? And Verrilli is the name of the lawyer. He says, nope. Roberts says Massachusetts. And then he goes on to disparage Massachusetts. And Bill Galvin, who's in charge of the elections, he is the Secretary of State, says in essence that the Chief Justice has no idea what he's talking about.
The
facts are wrong. And he was obviously, whether it's disingenuous or just ill-informed, he was wrong. So one, what do you make of the controversy? And two, how important, things have changed. How important is it in 2013 that the Voting Rights Act, particularly its provision Section 5, be renewed? How much does it matter?
Okay, well, first of all, things have changed. I mean, to suggest that nothing has changed is to imply that King and the movement and all that business was a failure. So it simply can't, both things can't be true. We can't be lionizing King and talk about the civil rights movement and all of that business, and then nothing changed, right? Because that's an indictment of everybody.
So what's the however?
Right. However, for me, what I take away from the Roberts dig is that, listen, you very fancy, high-end Northeastern liberals, right? You might want to slow your roll in terms of, you know, looking down on the South. And so what I picked up was not even so much a question of the numbers, but he was saying, listen, you know what? This smug, condescending Northeastern corridor liberal, you know, patronizing
Gene
attitude.
Rivers is looking at me as he's saying this, but I want to be clear for those not watching this discussion.
Look, you frothing at the mouth hypocrites. Why don't you just tone it down? Because if we want to, now let me just say this. One of the things that Roberts doesn't address, the pattern of voter suppression. Listen, look at Florida. Are you kidding?
Now,
there's no way you
can
dodge that. No. People have to get up there for hours.
Yep.
Right. And we go back to 2000 and the election, which was stolen. And Jim Baker came in to save George Senior's baby. Right. There's no question. So you got two issues here. One, things have changed. So we need to tone down the rhetoric and stop painting the South as though it's simply Klan country when you've got all the black power in Atlanta that you have, right? By the same token, you must recognize that, listen, voter suppression is real. And now, much of that voter suppression was triggered, ironically, by the first black guy running for president, which is part of the irony and dialectic of the thing, right? Because in an odd way, connected to that, is race relations in some sense may be a little less cordial as a function of the fact that you had a black guy who then triggered the run on guns the day after the election in 08? So my sense is there are two things going on.
One last question for me, Gene Rivers. In Boston, historically, people have said that in city elections, the huge vote is in South Boston. The huge vote is in West Roxbury. That yeah. Mattapan and Dorchester have not voted that well. Now, I know that's changed with Deval Patrick running for governor sure. and Barack Obama running for president.
Sure.
But isn't that still true that in the city elections, there's not a great turnout
and off
from
your
neighborhood?
No, no, no. And off your elections. Yeah. And that's a crucial distinction, right? When Obama was running, everybody was voting often and early, right? All
right.
So,
right.
And with Deval, same thing. So, and same thing with Mel King. Now, and then this is a very important point that you make, because what should be noted is that black people vote when they think they've got something and someone to vote for. If they've got some lackluster politicians who are perceived as losers or not really, right, they don't show up. But if it's Deval Patrick, you know, our time has come.
The black city councilors are losers, is that what you're saying? Charles Yancey, who else is on the – Tito Jackson. Tito Jackson's an up-and-coming star in the Boston City Council.
Absolutely.
But wait a second. Are white people any different? I mean, first of all, white – even turnout in presidential elections, I think, as democracies go, is pretty pathetic.
Yeah.
And I assume for the minority of people, whites,
right.
who do not show up to vote,
yeah.
it's because you hear the line. There's no difference between these two. They're Obama
yeah.
and
yeah.
McCain, Obama and Mitt Romney are the same person,
yeah.
just
yeah.
in different bodies. So,
yeah.
so how's that different? And by the way, blacks turn, Menino won 70%
oh,
of the black vote.
I mean,
overwhelming
oh, yeah.
numbers.
Absolutely. Black people love Menino because he gets things done.
So can I go back to what you said a couple of minutes ago before sure. this voting rights yeah. thing that, you know, you're so happy you're here rather than Chicago. Things in Chicago are so much worse. The homicide rate for, and I may be off a little bit, is essentially the same. It's been year after year after year. I think Tom Menino cares about this deeply.
No,
I think
no
Ed
question.
Davis cares about it deeply. The ministers in the 10-point coalition
yeah,
are meeting all the time. But
yeah.
nothing really changes
well, yeah,
in
does.
Terms of outcomes.
Yeah,
what
yeah,
is,
yeah,
what
yeah,
do you mean,
it
yes,
no,
it
no,
does?
No, no. Yeah, of course it does. Right, look, first of all, our numbers are nowhere where they were in the 90s. We had the crack explosion.
No, I'm talking about the last 7, 8, 9 years.
7, 8 years, okay.
50, 60, whatever
right.
it is. The numbers are fairly constant.
Okay, but see, you have constant numbers that are fairly low. Right. Yeah, they are constant. Right. There's not been a dramatic drop. But I'll tell you what is objectively different in the city of Boston. People generally feel safer generally about the town. Right. This is not when you had open air drug dealing guys
yeah.
In the street. Right. Now, part of that is and I said this in the Globe a couple of weeks ago. Technology has revolutionized crime. So you
it's
can
nothing like quoting yourself, by the way.
Right,
it's
yeah,
unbelievable.
Yeah.
So you can deal right in the comfort
exactly.
of your own
no, no,
apartment.
No, absolutely. So I would say this. The character of the violence has changed, right? The city must catch up with that because they're getting younger and younger, right, number one. Number two, and I'm glad I have this opportunity to say this, girls are now in the game more than many public health officials want to acknowledge. Girls are in the game. We had this case.
We're talking the gang game?
The gang game and the criminal enterprise game. This mm-hmm. is very important. The criminal enterprise game, because one of the new industries, and this is, and to your point, Jim, one of the new industries, which is off the books, is the kidnapping of drug dealers.
Kidnapping of drug dealers?
Yeah, yeah. One of the cottage industries that has been evolving over the last few years
wow.
is that young dudes will make their money kidnapping a drug dealer. Now, when the drug dealer pays the ransom, for ransom, right? When the drug dealer pays the ransom, a crime has been committed. It's off the books because no one reported it. So our numbers are do not reflect the extent of certain things. But it's safe because that's not a civilian game. That's criminal on criminal.
Yeah.
Right, so that's fair game.
Let me ask you about one more comparison before we let you go, Gene Rivers. Again, hearkening back, I love Boston, by the way. I love it with
of course
a passion.
You
well, it's good to know, Jim.
No,
you love
but I want to say
yeah,
this.
Yeah. High end liberal that he is.
I was in Chicago. Thank you very much. I've worked very hard to become a high end liberal, Gene Rivers. Eugene F. Rivers III. I was in Chicago a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
And this is all anecdotal because I live here. I don't
sure.
live there. I was there
right.
for 2 days, whatever it is. It seems to me Chicago is a much more integrated city in a de facto way than Boston is. I mean, it so happens.
Almost every place is.
But
no.
so what
no,
do you mean no?
True.
You
not
don't
true.
Think that's true?
No, no not at
You don't
what?
Think there is greater de facto segregation in this city?
Are you kidding? Let me tell you something. I know we drink the Obama juice,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And we've all brought everybody together, and yes, we can, and all that business. Let me tell you something. Chicago is segregated. In fact, Chicago is more segregated in the South. Let me give you an interesting anecdote on this point, right? One of the things that Robert's sort of hinting at is the hypocrisy of the North. King, Chicago was the only city that King was literally run out of. He went to Montgomery. He went to Birmingham. He went to Selma. He did his thing, achieved victories, right? He goes to Chicago. The black preachers, right, you know, at the behest of the mayor, ran him out. In 66, he goes thinking he's going to take his southern regional strategy and go to Chicago. Dude,
but
bad
Gene,
move.
But Gene, in 2013, though, I think one of the things you notice, is that if you go to a restaurant, there's a lot of black people in the high-end restaurants. You don't see that much in Boston. I think
because they're under black. But that's a different issue. That's not an issue of segregation. That's an issue of economic
middle
development.
Class.
No,
a
no,
big,
middle class.
Big
no, no,
black
no.
Middle class.
And, no, no. And economic development. Why don't we have a high-end Georgia Brown's restaurant, very, very, you know, posh black restaurant?
What's
in
the answer?
D.C. Economic development. And really drill into the question, because I know you're going to lean on me. The black community and the black professional class have to learn how to play the game. There's $1.6 billion worth of economic development in this town, and blacks need to get a bite of the apple on that. Now, they've got to play a smarter game. You got to fight smarter, not harder, in this town.
On
Thank
that note, boy, that was
much.
A hell of a conclusion. Now, what's the F stand for in Eugene F. Rivers?
Don't start. Don't
no,
what,
really, just come on. Let's get it all out. Let's get it over with, and we won't have to bring it up again.
Oh, my goodness.
What's that?
Franklin.
Oh, my
If God. You must.
Oh, my goodness.
Eugene
you just called
Franklin
yourself,
Rivers the Third.
You just called yourself a high-end liberal?
No, he called me a high-end
yeah,
liberal.
Yeah, Stephen emailed and said he thinks of you as a hind-end.
Thank you, Stephen, for that email.
Okay.
Thank you, good people.
Reverend
Let's
Rivers, great to see you. See you next Monday at 1 o'clock.
Excellent.
And tomorrow at 1 o'clock, tune in for Open Mic with Charlie Baker. Up next, Americans are getting fatter and fatter and fatter. Our next guest says it's because the food industry on purpose has made us a nation of addicts. That's our conversation next on Boston Public Radio 89.7 WGBH.